Hey guys, welcome back to The Tie. Henry here, really excited to bring you this episode today with Brandon Wu. Brandon was a teammate of mine for 3 years at Stanford upon him graduating in 2019, at which time he would turn pro and embark on what has been a really interesting pro career thus far, navigating not having any status, doing Corn Ferry Mondays, going through a global pandemic, gaining Corn Ferry status, and then ultimately gaining his PGA Tour card just a handful of days ago. So we're really excited to see B-Woo tee it up full-time on the PGA Tour next season. I think he's going to be really well cut out with the game that he has to be super successful out there. So very excited to track his progress and see everything that happens going forth. We also talk a bit about his background, some of his other interests, and what he likes to do off the golf course in his new home of Dallas, what things look like for him on an off day and an off week, and what it's been like navigating pro golf thus far outside of just actually playing the game with all the travel and nutrition and things that go into being a successful pro golfer. So fun conversation. Think you all are really going to enjoy it. Appreciate you being at The Tie as always, and let's get to the episode with Brandon. Let's start with some of the golf stuff. Would love to hear more about you recently earning your card. First and foremost, congratulations on that. Really cool to be on the PGA Tour, obviously a lifelong dream. I want to kind of back into the whole path to getting there because it's been quite the wild road. So I'm going to paint the picture for people a little bit on basically the end of your amateur career and then let you fill in on everything that's happened basically in the last 18 months with you turning pro. So obviously Stanford team goes on a heater in 19, culminates in the national championship. You go 3-0 rather than 0-3 in match play. And correct me if I get wrong here on any of the timeline, but so I believe we win the national championship. You go straight to the Palmer Cup from there to represent the U.S. team. You then qualify for the U.S. Open. You play in the U.S. Open, making the cut, finishing very highly there. You then qualify for the Open Championship at Portrush, play in that, go to the Pan Am Games and win gold with Team USA. You then go straight to Pinehurst for the U.S. Amateur with no practice rounds and medal. And then after the U.S. Amateur, you represent the U.S. in the Walker Cup. So pretty wild ending to your amateur career, about as good as it gets. You then go to Q School and don't get full status necessarily on the Corn Ferry. And that's kind of where we start. So how about you fill everyone in on basically what the last 18, 20 months have looked like with a crazy couple years in the world? And it all culminating with you being on the PGA Tour now.
Yeah, for sure. I think you put it correctly. That was definitely a wild summer. I think it was definitely a fun way to finish off my amateur career. And yeah, I definitely couldn't have dreamed of having that kind of summer, you know, playing two majors and going down to Peru and playing for Team USA down there and winning the Walker Cup as well on the road. So yeah, those were all super cool experiences to finish off my amateur career. But then, yeah, like you said, I went to Q School. I was already into second stage by virtue of making the cut at the U.S. Open, which was nice to kind of skip that first step. But so I made it through second stage, and then you get to final stage. So everyone at final stage has conditional status. And then if you finish in the top 40 at final stage, you'll get full status on the Corn Ferry Tour. So I ended up finishing 61st, so three shots out of the top 40. So yeah, basically that left me with conditional status. So I guess conditional status, just to kind of explain a little bit, you're kind of just a little bit lower on the totem pole. So, you know, they'll fill their field with all the people that kept their card from the year prior, all the new guys that made it through Q School. And then basically if there's spots left over to fill in the field, you kind of plug in these conditional guys. So what that meant for me was just kind of waiting around to see if I would get into an event or not. And then, basically I was close, maybe the fifth or sixth event of the year down in Mexico. I ended up being a first alternate. So I was down there on property, kind of playing some practice rounds and seeing if I would get in. Did not end up getting in. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, COVID hit and the world shut down. So I think the golf career was kind of put on a hiatus right then and there. So yeah, I think
the old sticks got a well-deserved break.
Yeah. It was kind of for me, that was a super interesting time. Cause I mean, honestly, like I practiced to get ready for things and like, to play in tournaments, you know? So with like no tournaments in sight, it was just kind of a indefinite break, from golf. And, you know, for me, that was kind of fun, because I think, you know, people were like, this could be the last time in your career for a long, long time that you get a break like this, you know, just pretty casual. You don't have to play any golf if you don't want, get to hang out. So yeah, for me, that was kind of a cool time, kind of interesting. Just kind of settled into Dallas. Luckily our course Trinity Forest was still open. So I'd go play the occasional game with the members. They started a little group chat called the Quarantine Pro Tour, which is pretty exciting. You know, we'd have some games here and there. So that was fun. And honestly, that was great for me because I got to know the members at Trinity Forest really well during that time. You know, otherwise I would have been quite busy on the road and might not have met people that quickly in Dallas. So for me, that was good. But yeah, I think July, that's when June, July is when the season kind of resumed. But for me, that meant going back to being pretty low on the totem pole just because everyone was itching to play again. So, you know, the fields would fill up with everyone from the Korn Ferry Tour and quite a few PGA guys as well. Cause you know, they're kind of the lower guys in the PGA Tour facing the same problem where everyone wants to play the tournaments and suddenly they're getting pushed out and they're kind of filtering down the Korn Ferry Tour and they're playing. So for me, it was kind of a, you know, chasing Monday qualifiers, waiting for maybe a sponsor exemption, which is a tough road. I played that first Monday qualifier in the first tournament back and ended up losing in a 4-for-3 playoff. So that was kind of bitterly disappointing. And then didn't have much luck in the Monday qualifiers after that. And then, you know, wait a few more weeks, kind of just a waiting game still, finally get a sponsor's invite into the event at TPC Colorado. I think this was right around 4th of July at this point. And I test positive for COVID. So
I had forgotten about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just kind of, you know, kind of build up and then crashing down. So, yeah, that was pretty unfortunate. But yeah, finally, I think later, like a month or two later, I'm driving up to play in Springfield, Missouri. I play a Monday qualifier and I get a phone call that enough people were planning on taking that week off that, you know, I finally shuffle into a tournament and can play that week. So that was pretty exciting for me. Yeah, suddenly, but you know, also it was just like kind of like a, like it's go time, you know, you've been waiting for this opportunity the entire time, like kind of puts a little bit of pressure, you know, this is an important week where if you can kind of shuffle in and play well and score some points, suddenly you can move up on your number and start to get into more events. So yeah, went into the week. I guess it was kind of a bittersweet week because I played really well through 3 days, had a 3-shot lead going to the final round, which was a great place to be, but, you know, struggled the last day and ended up finishing 9th. But in a way that was good enough to score enough points to kind of get me into the next stretch of events, which happened to be, I think one regular season event and then basically, the regular season finale and the 3 playoff events. So yeah, scored enough points, to get into those. And then, basically, yeah, that was kind of the start of my run where we played in Boise, which we are in again, a year later right now this week. But I played well in Boise, ended up finishing tied for 2nd, which again, moved me up to, I think maybe 37th or so on the points list. And suddenly I'm pretty much into all the tournaments for this upcoming year. Which was a huge relief, you know, especially with conditional status coming in. It's just so nice to not have to worry and, you know, check your calendar to see if you can get into an event or not. And suddenly you're into all of them. Right. So that was kind of a, yeah, huge relief for me. And then 2 weeks later, we played it, the tour championship in Evansville, Indiana. And I think I came back from maybe four or five back to win. So, I mean, that was kind of cherry on top for that, 6 week stretch, culminating in a win. And then that upgrades me to full status in the Corn Ferry Tour. I think moved me to like fifth on the points list. And, yeah, that was kind of the, just, you know, six quick weeks in a long year that really propelled my career forward quite a bit.
Yeah. And so just like such a crazy development there where, you know, you really look back at COVID in professional golf and it feels as if people have pretty much been siloed for about 18 months into whatever level they happen to be at when the pandemic hit, more or less. I mean, you look at the PGA Tour and for better or for worse, for many people, you can't really be demoted from the tour at the time. I guess that's now coming back as of a week ago, but everyone last year was able to stay on the tour, but no one was able to get on, which was basically the same thing with the Corn Ferry Tour, unless you basically did what you did, which is to Monday in or get a chance to play somewhere and then just pretty much overperform. Not to say that you overperformed, but you had to significantly outperform any sort of opportunity you got to make any sort of a jump in pro golf. It seemed like, you know, you saw Will Gordon go finish third or whatever it was in Connecticut, and he ends up getting on the PGA Tour. But basically it was performances like that that it took to kind of jump from one tier to the next, because there was no formal process of graduation and no Q schools. And so it more or less takes kind of what you did over that 6 week period to move up. But then where the story continues and becomes weird is, so, you know, you talk about how you go through COVID, no real interest in playing, there's nothing to play and practice for. And then you get back to it, but you're just getting start sporadically, trying to do Monday Qs, you know, still just kind of floundering along. Well, then all of a sudden you get some opportunities, you make something out of them. And 6 weeks later, you've gone from like, where are we at? Am I going to even have any events to play to, oh, well, now I'm going to be on tour, but I have to wait like a full year before I'm there. Yeah. So yeah. It just like completely flips the script to, wow, I went from not even being a Corn Ferry guy to like, now I'm not a Corn Ferry guy either. I'm going to be a PGA guy, but I have to burn this full year of figuring out, you know, how to continue to get better without being able to go onto the tour. So was there any sort of shift in like, okay, now I'm going to start thinking about these Corn Ferry events as I'm just preparing to be on the PGA Tour next year? Did it, like, how exactly have you approached basically the last 12 months, more or less, of, okay, I'm going to be on the PGA Tour, but I have to wait a little bit while, wait a little bit longer to actually get out there?
Yeah, for sure. I think I knew, you know, whatever system they came up with, there was always going to be pros and cons. And yeah, I guess one of the cons of the system that was ended up being implemented was that I would have to wait an extra year. But honestly, I thought that wasn't too bad for me because of, I guess, a couple of reasons. So I think one was I ended up playing, I think, three more events towards the end of last year. So that means I only played 9 Corn Ferry events. So I feel like I was still relatively inexperienced with a lot of like some of the other things that come along with pro golf, for example, like traveling week to week and, you know, how to manage your schedule during Monday through Wednesday and playing pro-ams and managing those. And, you know, so I felt like having a full year under my belt was only just going to help me develop into a better, like, professional golfer. You know, the golf is obviously the same stuff, but just like, yeah, like learning how to play and travel and play a lot of golf. Cause I think that there's quite a difference between amateurs and professionals and just how much golf you play. I mean, we're playing, I don't know how many, like maybe up to 30 something tournaments this year, which is probably double what I played in college. So
a lot of
golf. I thought that was, yeah, it is a lot of golf. So I thought, you know, it was a great opportunity for me to kind of just learn how to play. And I guess, yeah, going back to what you were saying, I think I was in the fortunate position of more or less kind of being a lock for getting a tour card. So I kind of looked at this year as a way just to get better, you know. Goes hand in hand with like learning how to play professional golf, but I felt like I wasn't too focused on how my results were being played out, and I was more just focused on getting better each week and working on things that I wanted to get better at. I think one big goal was to improve my wedge play, and I feel like I have this year. So I think that was definitely a success. And I look back at the last year or so, and I feel like the results haven't been there, which, you know, it sucks for sure. And sometimes it's disheartening, but I think big picture, I've gotten better as a golfer. I'm more experienced, and I think that prepares me better for next year, honestly.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And that's a really good way to look at kind of this past year of, you know, this has been a process of improving, being a better professional golfer, you know, not necessarily right. being a better golfer. We'll figure that part out. But like, there is a difference between the golfer you were as a college golfer versus the golfer that you're going to be as a professional golfer, because it just comes with so many different sorts of things. And so taking a year where, you know, you played so well to alleviate this pressure from yourself of having to worry about, okay, what's my status going to be? You took care of that in a 6-week period. And so you were then afforded this opportunity to focus on some of the softer things that actually aren't so soft. People underestimate, you know, travel and all of those sorts of things. You know, that plays right into something I wanted to ask you, which is, now that, you know, you're 3 days removed from actually, you know, having a PGA Tour card in your hand, quite literally, you know, have you thought at all about, or have you been going through this whole process of thinking about, okay, what are the things, maybe it is more game specific, you know, you mentioned your wedge play, but what are the things that are going to take me from, okay, I'm a top Korn Ferry player and have proven some success, which we'll get to at the highest levels, but go from that to a consistent week to week, like getting into the WGCs and the majors and being a guy that can feel like on your solid weeks, you're going to be up there in the top 10, top 25 on the PGA Tour. You know, have you started to dive into some of those things of, you know, where you're going to reach that next level, so to speak?
Yeah. I think, the wedges were, I felt like, my biggest deficiency in my game. And I feel like that's been coming along nicely. But also, yeah, I think stuff around the greens is something that changes a little bit from the Korn Ferry to the PGA Tour. As we go to tougher golf courses, the rough is longer around the greens, the courses are longer, the greens are firmer. So that leads to kind of, it puts more stress on your short game. You know, you got to hit more detailed shots, I think. And you got to be good around the green. So that's something that I've been, you know, kind of working into my practice routine and working on a little bit. Been hanging out with David Lipsky a little bit. He's got a really good short game. He's kind of played all over the world. So, you know, just kind of soaking it in from him and learning a little bit about that is really great. And I think one other interesting thing I've been kind of focusing on maybe the last half of this season is just kind of like course management and like using, you know, maybe some data to drive how we manage courses, how we game plan them. And I think that's something really interesting, because I think there's a lot of data on the PGA Tour, especially with ShotLink, and you know, so people can really analyze that and build a good solid game plan from that. So just learning, you know, like picking a target based on the numbers, you know, your dispersion with drivers, let's say 70 yards. So you want to center that at this tree, and, you know, just trusting it, just knowing that you don't have to worry about, oh, I can't miss right here because it's out of bounds. I've already accounted for that in picking my target. So if I just make an aggressive swing towards my target, I know that I'm going to keep the ball in play. And I think working a little bit on that is going to be really useful as we go to bigger, tougher golf courses and play on the PGA Tour next year.
It's a cool way to look at it, kind of like a money ball approach of, you know, X times out of 100, it's going to be fine because I know what my dispersion is. And yeah, that one might come in every now and then, but, you know, almost deriving your confidence from that of, okay, 99 times out of 100, if I aim here, I'm going to be within 25 yards either way. So if I have 50 yards to deal with, then I don't need to be nervous about something to the right or the left, because 99 times out of 100, it's not coming out. You know, it's a weird way to kind of spin that into rather than just statistical thinking, you know, basing your confidence a little bit off of those stats. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that or, you know, we've touched on a couple of things, a couple of your accolades in the past. You clearly have a really good ability to I guess rise to the occasion suffices, but I'm getting more at, you know, you've gotten some starts on the big tour already, some sponsors exemptions. I recall you playing really well in Houston. I guess that would have been probably fall of 19 or maybe early 2020.
Fall of 19.
Okay. And, you know, some other sponsors exemptions that you had, you made some cuts and had some really good rounds, played great at the US Open. You know, what is it about playing in bigger events that seems to bring the best out in you? Do you think that it's more game oriented, that you're just set up well for it? Is it Brooks style? Do you like actually show up and care and practice that week? Or do you think that you just kind of have a mentality that works really well for rising to the occasion when the lights are the brightest?
I would say a little combination of things. I think I feel like I had success that year at the US Open at Pebble, partly due to my game. I think the greens are tiny at Pebble. And you know, the pins are usually kind of in the middle of the greens because there's so much slope and they're so small. And you know, I'm pretty good with my irons. So I think that kind of lent itself, it kind of like worked into my game. And I've definitely become a pretty solid putter. So I think I leaned on my putter pretty heavily that week too. So I think, you know, that was one example of maybe my game fit that course quite well. But I think the mentality too, I kind of enjoy, you know, playing in front of crowds and like at the big stage. Cause I mean, I definitely get a little nervous and, you know, feel the butterflies, but I also think it's kind of exciting. You know, those are kind of exciting nerves as well. It's a chance to, you know, hit a good shot and kind of show off in a sense and, you know, play well and impress people. So I think, I enjoy that. And I think people find their own ways of motivating and applying focus and playing well at tournaments. And I think that's one of the ways that I do it for myself.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, something you're saying there about just your game specifically and playing well at a place like Pebble, you know, I think that there's no secret as to why it's almost a chicken and egg thing. It's, you know, are the top players the top players because they're ranked the highest? Or are they the top players because they perform at the best events because they are truly the best? And I think when you really dig into the rankings, what you'll begin to find, the rankings and the statistics, what you'll begin to find is more and more the guys who hit the ball better are at the top, and they're at the top because they perform the best in the biggest events, and they perform the best in the biggest events because you have to hit the ball the best at those sorts of courses. And so All of those things begin to come together. And I think that's something that you have to feel really good about as you look towards, you know, years into your pro career, is that you've always been a great ball striker, and ball striking at the end of the day is the essence of playing truly tip-top golf. And so I think there's no coincidence as to why you show up at a place like Pebble. And although it may seem precocious for a senior or recently graduated senior from college to play as well as you did in an event like that, for you, you were probably like, this is what my game is. You know, I hit the ball well and I can manage myself otherwise. And that's got to give you a lot to look forward to going forth.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like my game will hopefully translate well to, you know, bigger, tougher courses. And I think interestingly enough, I feel like through my college years, I actually learned a lot about managing my game, because I think I'd go through kind of struggles at Stanford of hitting it the way I wanted. But, you know, that helped me learn how to get the most out of my game, you know? So I think I just try to look back on all my experiences and draw, you know, different learnings and different insights that I picked up. I thought that one from Stanford was really cool, because, yeah, I knew that like if I learned how to manage my game and get the most out of my game and how to score, that when I eventually do start to hit it better, you know, that's just, the knowledge is already there and I can kind of apply these new skills I have on top of that.
Yeah. We've talked a lot of golf. We're going to hit some more golf here, but we're also going to get away from golf here after this question. I do have to ask you about the recent decision that you have a full-time bag man going forth as you embark on the PGA Tour career. Would you like to talk a little bit about who will be lugging the sticks when you get on the big tour?
Yeah, it's our former assistant coach, Ryan Jameson, more affectionately known as JMO. But yeah, it was super exciting that the opportunity came up where, you know, he was willing to caddy for me and I was looking for kind of a full-time guy. He'd helped me out for 2 weeks at the end of last year in the fall. And, you know, we got along great. We had some good finishes. I think we finished 10th. 1 week in Savannah. And then we actually almost won our next week in Florida. So yeah, 2 good weeks there. I mean, I feel like I've realized like you just have to have someone that you get along with on the bag because you're spending so much time together and so much time on the road and it can be kind of lonely. And it's, you know, you have to work with someone that you're very comfortable with, that you like spending time with, you know? So that was kind of my number one thing. And JMO obviously fits that bill wonderfully. And, you know, he's had a golf background his entire life. And, you know, I think he combined that with a really strong work ethic and a belief that he can be the best caddy out there. And it's kind of importantly, his belief in me too. You know, he wants to see me succeed and he believes I can, and he wants to do everything he can to see that happen. So I think I felt like all the parts were in place, and then that was like an awesome opportunity. And yeah, it's been great. You know, we all know he's a great person to be around, super positive and, you know, funny. So it's been really fun having him on the bag full time.
Yeah. No, we're excited to see you guys get out there next year. He's good at it and totally bought in, as you say, and easy guy to travel with. So I think he's going to be a great match and
for sure, yeah.
Be a big part of your success next season. So let's get off golf here for a minute. Let's talk about some other things. I've been really intrigued at how into and also good you have become at cooking. It's something that I don't know if you've always been into cooking necessarily, or if you kind of picked it up post-school, but what is kind of the backstory there? Like, is that something you've been into for a while, or was it more of just like, shoot, I guess I got to learn how to do this now that I'm out of school and cook for myself?
Yeah, I guess a couple factors. So at home we cook basically every night. My parents do. My dad really likes to cook. My mom likes to cook. So, you know, I've been around it kind of quite a bit, and they make, you know, an array of different Chinese dishes and the food is phenomenal. But yeah, I think once I got my own apartment and, you know, it was fun, especially during COVID, just to experiment and cook a little bit. And, yeah, I think on top of that, once you start traveling for golf, you're away from home for 5-6 weeks and you're eating out every night. I think you kind of start
to get old fast.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I just look forward to like making my own meal at home and, doing it exactly how I like. And, yeah, cause I also feel like I really like this unique combo of, it's kind of like Chinese cuisine a little bit. Cause you know, I like to make rice pretty much every night. And then I'll saute some vegetables, which are kind of like Chinese style, but then, you know, I'd like to do a steak or like some other, you know, grill some chicken or something, which might be a little bit more Western. So, you know, for me, it's like, those are the foods I like, and it's maybe not at one restaurant that you could find all that stuff. So it's fun for me to cook.
So what are like, and maybe you don't necessarily have a name for something you'd make, like a, you know, whatever it is. But what are your best few dishes or combinations of things, you know, if you're going to have some people over and you want to kind of impress them with a meal, like what are some of the sorts of dishes or meals that you would put together?
Yeah, I think I've gotten pretty solid at making steak, actually. That's my favorite thing to make. So I got a cast iron, which I think is really good for getting a nice sear. And it keeps the temperature pretty even, I think, throughout. So it's a good way to cook it properly. And then I got like a meat thermometer so you can get your steak done exactly how you want it.
Are you a reverse sear guy or traditional?
No, I'm traditional. Yeah, just like to get it done just in the cast iron. And yeah, that's been good. Let's see. I've done just sauteed vegetables. You know, it's pretty simple. I like to cook healthily as well. It's mostly just a little olive oil, salt, some garlic. And then a couple, I guess, dishes that I One I thought that was kind of unique was I got, you know, some bulgogi sauce from the store. I go to this like Asian market called H Mart. I think it's like a Korean market. And, you know, people usually like marinate meat in it, but I got into kind of making that with tofu, which I think is pretty good. It's got a, you know, nice texture, nice taste. And so, yeah, that's one of my favorite dishes to cook as well.
Massive pub for tofu here on the Thai. I'm a big tofu fan.
Yeah.
Posted it on the story a couple of weeks ago. And I think some people thought it was pretty weird. So I've been needing some backup on tofu. I always say that those who think tofu is disgusting just have not had good tofu. Like it can be really good. You just probably haven't had it in a proper preparation. That's neat. So you mentioned it there. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, how cooking is kind of in synergy with golf and with your workout plan. Like how do you kind of bring all of those things together now that, you know, your body is like very, very important. You know, that's kind of your lifeline to some degree. Do you focus a lot around your nutrition and having that be married nicely with your body work and everything else that you're doing to contribute to, you know, your continued golf success?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's hard to realize like how important your body is and how like your health affects your performance and your living as a matter of fact, you know, until you like kind of experience it. And especially with how much golf we play, I just think it's really important to keep your body in as good of shape as possible, you know, cause just the weeks get so long and whatnot. But nutrition is something I'm not like super detailed into what I eat, but you know, I know like eating something like fried and heavy the night before a tournament is probably not the best idea. And I try to avoid those, but I guess my latest experiment or two, I got like a little like personal blender, just cause basically every week you have at least one pretty early tee time where you're waking up like 4:30 probably, and you're playing 7:30-ish. And they always have food at the course, but you know, a lot of times it's kind of like eggs and bacon and whatnot. And I've realized that like, especially during the summer months when it's really hot and humid outside, it's like
not palatable at 5 a.m. Yeah,
for sure. Like, and even if you do eat it by like, you know, the middle of your round, it just feels too heavy. You know, it's so hot out, you're sweating. And all you can feel is the greasy bacon in your stomach. So I've been trying to just do a little like smoothie in the morning before those morning tea times. Just it's something lighter, it's something cold, and you know, it gives you a little bit of fuel. And then you know, some snacks on the course. One thing I've been trying on the course is just having a protein shake at the turn. It was a good idea. I think Lipsky told me about it, but. It's a good way to hydrate. Again, it's not like something really heavy that sits in your stomach.
Right.
So it's that's been kind of interesting too, but yeah, that's just, I think, personal preference and something that you gotta figure out yourself, like what works, what doesn't work, and how does it make you feel, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of other things to keep the body on point, I know you're not afraid of a rest day. give me two different sorts of rest days, both without a golf club in hand, but one that's like a true, I'm going to take it really slow and kind of like recover. And then the other one, which may entail, you know, I'm going to get a workout in, I'm going to go see a physio, you know, whatever that may be. What is like a full blown rest day, like fully off versus, you know, an on but off day?
Yeah. I mean, I would say at tournaments, there's not really like a full blown rest day. It's hard to get that because you finish a tournament on Sunday and then you kind of use Monday as a travel / rest day. So
yeah,
I guess your full blown rest day is a travel day where, I usually don't pick up a club on a Monday. If I, especially if I'm coming off a tournament that I played the weekend in, just to give my body a little break. I travel with the Normatec. That's been really useful, just because there's so much walking, your legs get so tired throughout the week. So I think that's a great way to kind of just lay down and you know, put your mind at ease and throw those on and just kind of relax for a little bit. But yeah, I think more active rest during tournaments would be, yeah, just doing my, making sure my body's right by doing my kind of like stretching and like exercises. I think that's super important. And then just taking it easy, you know. I think as important as physical rest is, I think mental rest is also important. Just giving your mind a little reset, a little break too. And I think honestly, one of the best pieces of advice that I've ever gotten, or a little saying, I guess, was that it takes confidence to rest. And I was like, that, I think that makes so much sense, because I mean, to each their own, but you know, for me, like, I definitely see people just kind of like grinding there during Monday through Wednesday and getting ready for the tournament and whatnot. But, you know, it takes confidence to rest. If you feel good, you feel good. You don't need to kill yourself out there. You just feel ready and then get some rest and get ready for the week, you know? So I think that was pretty kind of a good mantra to have.
Yeah, that's really cool. I feel like that's something that Mora Cowell would talk about, you know, how he prides himself on getting a lot out of the time that he puts in, but that doesn't mean that he's putting in 7 or 8 hours every single day necessarily. You know, it might be 2 or 3, but super focused. And then, you know, he's very confident that, you know, the other 4 hours that other guys are still kind of just beating it around, you know, he's doing something that is contributing to his success, but he's not driving himself into the ground while doing so. So that's pretty neat.
I think that's like for people coming out, I think that can be like, you know, you go out there and it's like, oh, I'm a professional now. Like I need to be working at all times during the day. Like I need to be getting better. And, you know, the like mindset of it takes confidence to rest. Like you just said, it's like you are helping yourself by resting. You know, it might not seem like much, but you are preparing yourself. You are doing the right thing. And I think sometimes like people who get out there initially, like might not understand that. And that can kind of hurt them.
Yeah. You talk about mental rest from golf. I mean, golf can be like very mentally draining. You know, what do you like to do? Maybe not necessarily, maybe it is resting. But let's just call it like intellectual stimulation outside of golf. Like, are you into reading or, you know, the stock market or any of those sorts of things? Like, how do you, you know, you're a pretty cerebral guy. How do you kind of get the neurons firing outside of sitting there adding numbers on the course and stressing over five footers?
I guess there's a few things I like to do. I don't really read, but I do listen to audiobooks. I almost always listen to them in the car, like let's say on my way to the course or on my way back, because, you know, more or less of the time it's probably like 15 to 20 minutes, you know, and it adds up over time. You know, I can do like a book every 2 tournaments or so, and it's good. You know, I think I've listened to a couple fiction books, but a lot of nonfiction. I've gone through most of Malcolm Gladwell's books. I just started this one by Trevor Moad, who's the mental coach for Russell Wilson. So, you know, just listening to how he helps Russell and stuff like that. I obviously love checking the stock market. not that I do much on it, but it's just, like you said, it's a way to take my mind off of things. And, I like to play video games too. It's a good way for me to kind of get away from the golf and just do something pretty mindless. You know, it's a good way to connect with my friends as well. And that's just like an easy hobby to have on the road and a easy way to rest too, because you're not doing much.
Yeah, yeah. How do you approach when you're on the road? You know, obviously you mentioned there's food at the course and let's to some degree set aside COVID and the like takeaway and whatnot world, but how do you approach week to week, like figuring out where you're going to eat and all of those sorts of different things? Do you like to try to keep it as simple as possible, or are you into trying to find some different spots and things along those lines?
I guess a little bit of both. Sometimes you have to just do something quick and simple. I mean, for example, I have a late tee time tomorrow. I probably won't get done till 6 o'clock and then got to get up at 5 the next morning. So you only got time.
Something fast.
For a quick dinner. So that, you know, that could be anything from Chipotle to, I don't know, like a salad place or something. But I think especially when we get to go to places and towns, like this week, Boise's cool because, you know, there's a bunch of different restaurants in town. It's fun to just go out and go out with some friends, some caddies, whatnot, and kind of explore the different places. So I like to mix it up a little bit. I will say it's probably a heavy rotation of Asian food on the road.
Nice. So, I've heard really good things about Boise. I have not been there, but I've heard that that's like one of the sleeper towns out there that has a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just the weather alone this week is beautiful. It's, I think, kind of low 80s and sunny. And yeah, that's honestly a nice break from hot and humid every week.
Yeah. I want to hear a little bit about Dallas and Texas in general. You know, you made the move there pretty much as soon as you turned pro. What exactly went into that? Like, what are a couple of the other places that you looked at? You know, how would you kind of rate out your time in Dallas thus far? And is there anything about Texas that you've gotten really into that you maybe wouldn't have necessarily expected?
Honestly, Dallas has been so great. I love living in Dallas. Originally, I was probably looking at maybe living in Las Vegas, maybe in like Florida. And Dallas wasn't really on the radar, but I feel like as it got closer and closer to when I was sort of picking a place to move to, it dawned on me that I just really wanted to live in a city. And, you know, when I'm home from golf, like I would love to live as normal of a life as possible, you know. And Dallas is perfect because it's a pretty metropolitan area. I was hoping to, you know, make friends with people that works jobs and, you know, could just hang out with them on the weekend. And again, it's all part of like getting away from golf, getting away from the mental and physical grind of golf. But yeah, golf, Dallas has been phenomenal. I think it's cool to live. Like I get to live in like a high rise building, you know, so it has that city feel to it. It's not too big. The people are great. And yeah, I've really learned to love Dallas.
What are the odds you think that you're there pretty long term?
You know, I think I've thought about it a little bit, but like for the professional golf life, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, because it's not super expensive to live in Dallas. I'm a member at Trinity Forest, which is a phenomenal place to play and practice. You know, it's 10 minutes from my apartment, so it's super convenient to get to. I have a lot of really good friends in Dallas now, and also logistically for traveling, it's so easy to travel from the middle of the country versus, you know, from New York or even from Stanford, you're just far from pretty much everywhere. So yeah. I feel like
it's a good point being centrally located.
Yeah, for sure. That was kind of something that I hadn't thought about when I moved to Dallas, but yeah, it makes a huge difference. You know, you can pretty much get to, you know, all edges of the country in 3 hours, you know, instead of six. So I think it just makes a lot of sense as a professional golfer in my 20s to live in Dallas.
So here's a hypothetical for you. You go out on tour next year, big year. We're not going to specify exactly how well you do, but make plenty of money and you got a little bit of a hole burning in your pocket. Are we upgrading from an apartment to a house in Dallas or maybe upgrading the transportation to get around Dallas?
So I don't think I would buy a house, but I would probably look into buying a condo. Okay. I really, really like living in a high-rise building just because I think the views are nice. I really enjoy the feel of like living kind of in the city. And I feel like I just don't have any need for extra bedrooms and a yard or, you know, like all that stuff. So I don't think I would buy a house, but I could look into buying a condo. And honestly, I'd love to upgrade my transportation around Dallas. I definitely am pretty into cars and, you know, that would be something I'd look into, but, I also, you know, I don't really feel like I spend money on too many things outside of, you know, I like to go out and eat and go out to, you know, drink or have a good time. But, you know, other than that, I feel like I'm pretty frugal. I don't really spend money on too many material things. So I don't know. We'll see.
I was going to ask you a little bit further on, but since we're on the topic, if you did go buy a car and like nothing crazy, I guess, but yeah. Maybe you just frame it as the next car you buy, because it seems as if the way you're talking about it, you'll probably hold out for a little bit to buy something you're really into.
Yeah.
What do you think it'll be?
Man, I'd love to get a Porsche 911 probably. That's the same thing with like the extra space. Like I don't really feel like I have the need for a bigger car, and I kind of like quick cars. So that would be kind of the ideal landing spot for a car.
Love it. All right. So don't have like a name for this segment at all. Just basically short answer sort of questions, not necessarily one word or anything. But yeah, we'll just leave it as short answer. So first one, favorite three restaurants in Dallas.
Ooh, easy. Javier's Mexican Spot. That is, it's, the food is amazing. It's always a really fun time and it's great to have a great big group of people there.
Nice.
Namo for sushi. It's I think some of the best sushi I've ever had. And I feel like I've been not to Japan yet, so still to be determined, but like a lot of different places in New York, you know, all across the country. And I think Namo really stands out to me. And then I guess third is kind of up for grabs, I feel like, right now. But I would say there's a, you know, a little taco shop right at the base of my apartment called La Ventana. It's just super convenient. The tacos are like $2. It's Mexican street tacos, so that's really good. So that's just a fun place that I like to go to quite often. So that would probably be my third.
Nice. Very eclectic mix there. We're going to have to go to Namo next time I'm in Dallas, by the way. That sounds awesome.
For sure. It's awesome.
So you're currently in Texas, spent a lot of time in New York as you grew up, also, you know, Massachusetts, but let's just use New York as kind of the proxy there. Spent some time in China as well, and then also lived in California. So four different areas making up the pie of Brandon Wu. What percent are you of each of those four, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Let's see. Well, you could probably argue I'm 100% Chinese because that would be true. But for the sake of the game, let's see. I would say I feel like a lot of my personality comes from California, I would say. I was born in California and kind of lived there till I was 8, and then obviously college there. So I think just kind of the more laid back, like sort of attitude I probably get from California. And then I feel like I really identify with New York as well now, just as I got older, just because I spent more time there. And then I feel like in your teenage years, you kind of adopt personality traits quite quickly. And New York was cool because, you know, it's kind of a big bustling city, super diverse. You got to get to know how to talk to people and how to interact with people, you know, a lot. So I think that was kind of where that developed. I'm really fortunate for that. And then, I feel like I'm still kind of dipping my toe into the scene in Dallas, but it's been great. I've met a lot of great people and really gotten to love it. But yeah, I'm not sure the Dallas culture is quite rubbed off on me yet, but I think that'll probably change within the next few years.
Yeah, that's a cool way to break down, particularly the New York influence, that it's really helped you with kind of your interpersonal abilities and being able to speak with people, because that's how it is there. You know, people are very forward and open, and you can't just kind of like hide in the corner. You know, you got to be able to talk to people. So
yeah,
that's neat. All right. I'm interested to see which way you go with this one. So if you could make one more putt per round, so just a nagging 12 footer that always lips out, whatever it is, one more putt's going to go in or hit every drive 15 yards further, which one are you going to take?
Man, that's interesting. I would say one more putt per round probably, because I just know that if I make one more putt per round, like I can feel it, you know, out there in a sense, like after every round, it's always like, oh, like that one putt, like I just needed that one. And so I think that would do wonders for my mental health as well as my score.
Yeah. I wanted to hear how you would break that down just kind of anecdotally, because it's interesting to hear you say that, like mentally speaking, you know, maybe there's some momentum that you ride off of that or you just feel better about it. But I went with 15 yards because if you break it down statistically, this is my statistical deep dive of the day. If you break it down statistically by the expected shots gained, and we're making the assumption here that if you hit the ball 15 yards further, you're in the same cut of grass or bunker or whatever. Right. It's not, okay, you've now hit it in a bunker. It's, you're still in the bunker or you're still in the rough. You're still in the fairway.
Yeah.
But if you hit every drive, you know, assuming you're hitting 14 a day, 15 yards further, you would expect to gain about 0.07 strokes for each of those approach shots by being 15 yards closer which is to say you would gain about a shot by hitting right. your drive 15 yards further. So numerically speaking, it's the same effect as making one more putt. But I think that makes a lot of sense, as you say, that, yeah, maybe you gain more momentum off of each putt than you do off of the drive. You know, it's an interesting thing to look at. But anyway, two different ways to go about gaining strokes. Next one. And I will preface by saying I do believe he is at least an intermittent listener of The Tie. So do with that as you may. Describe your current relationship with Conrad Ray.
Great. I think, obviously haven't been able to see him quite as much, during this past year and a half, 2 years. But the one highlight was I got to play in a pro-am down at Pebble Beach with him, as one of my partners, which was super, super fun. There, you know, was kind of a Stanford group going down, you know, this is like the TaylorMade Pro-Am. So it's, you know, you're playing a tournament, you're playing for some money, but it was towards the end of the season. And, you know, it was kind of just an exhibition and a fun time. And yeah, for us, it was great, you know, getting to hang out with him. And, yeah, I think it's so good to see kind of how your relationship evolves, afterwards too. You know, you're not leaning on him as much as we were at school for like practice stuff or like, you know, that kind of stuff. But now it's like, you know, different life advice or different, you know, people he could maybe introduce you to and, you know, just other stuff like that. So it's cool to see how like, our relationship has evolved since being, you know, playing for Conrad. And now, Conrad's just like a friend and like a mentor as well. So I think it's pretty cool to see how that's changed.
How was coach's game out there in the pro-am?
Yeah, it was okay. I guess there are some good moments. You know, he was playing from the white tees, so you know that was pretty good advantage. But you know, we got to play Pebble that day, and it was just such a fun memory. So
yeah, that's neat. This is a fill in the blank. Traveling for golf is.
Tiring.
I was thinking you may go like necessary or annoying. Yeah, but yeah, tiring. That makes a lot of sense. Tiring. I think, you know, kind of per what we just discussed before, and not that other sports don't go through the same thing, but I think just with golf being unilateral and you're just kind of doing such a repetitive motion, it kind of throws you out of alignment, or your body is just constantly a little bit off, a little bit nagging. And the travel to me just like really accentuates that. You know, if your hip is off a little bit and then you have to go hop on a plane for a handful of hours, it just makes it that much worse. And so, you know, more power to the stuff that you focus on nutritionally and all that other stuff to really kind of keep it dialed in.
Yeah, definitely.
On that same note, next question. One dish that you would like to try to make but haven't, or one cuisine, something you want to do in the kitchen that you have yet to dabble in.
Yeah. So my parents, specifically my dad, loves to do like steamed fish at home, and it is absolutely delicious, but I can't say I've had the audacity to give that a try yet. So that'll be a future project.
So I'm going to challenge you to A, do it, B, post it to your story, and C, tag us in it. Tag at the Tie podcast. We want to get that one out. That sounds awesome. All right. Last one. I know you're a big sports guy. So dream sporting event to attend.
Ooh. Huh. That is an interesting question.
Can be very specific as well. If you want, you know, X team to be in X event.
Well, I guess this probably changes with my mood. Right now I'm pretty high on Zach Wilson and the Jets right now. So I'd love to see them in the Super Bowl. I mean, we'll see how they do this year, but that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, that'd be neat. I know you're a big Jets guy, so I figured that might be the direction that you're going.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, I'll follow up question that one. A Stanford football national championship or Jet Super Bowl?
I think for some undisclosed reasons, I'm going to pass on Stanford. I'm sure some might know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I'd love to just see the Jets win.
I feel that. That is all we have on the quick questions there. I do want to ask you a little bit more here about golf and as you approach being on the PGA Tour and kind of what's to come in the next few years. You know, you've played a couple times at least overseas. Obviously, you qualified for the British Open. You played the Dunhill Links a handful of years ago. And if I'm not mistaken, you played in an event in China. Was that a couple years back?
Hong Kong Open.
Nice. So have you contemplated at all, and this would probably be a handful of years down the line, but have you thought at all about pursuing dual membership of Euro and PGA? Like, is that something you'd be into to do a lot of travel and kind of play around the world?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the reasons why I wanted to play professional golf was because professional golf, you know, brings you to places that you might not ever travel to without it. So I think for sure. And when I first was turning pro, that was definitely something I considered because, you know, there's been a handful of Americans that have played over in Europe and had success. I mean, probably most notably Brooks Koepka. But yeah, and it just seemed like a great way to travel the world and get to play cool tournaments. So, but, you know, we ended up deciding that the best way to the PGA Tour was through the Korn Ferry, which I think is true. But you know, we talked about, hopefully you get good enough where people invite you and want you to come to your tournaments all over the world. And, you know, so I think that's definitely a possibility down the road.
Nice. And it kind of going off of that, you talk about, you know, all the people you meet and being able to play with different players and things across the world, different areas. We're going to leave everyone with one final question here before we get you out of here. So, who would you say you have your own podcast, who in pro golf that you're friends with do you think would be the best interview?
I think Joel Damon would probably be probably number one, with Kevin Kisner as a close number two. I think those guys would be awesome to have. Just lots of personality, very, very genuine too. I think that's super important because I think people can get kind of lost in the shuffle of just saying, you know, what everyone wants to hear and saying what you're supposed to say. And I think it's good to see some people just kind of say what they're thinking and, you know, and it's just fun, to kind of hear the different perspectives on professional golf, on life from guys like that.
I've heard Joel on podcasts before. He's good, but Kisner, that's a good call out. I'm excited to hear that. Final question of the day. I know I already said that the last one would be, but would you put in a word for us for Kisner? I think he'd be a pretty good one to have on the tie.
For sure. I think Kisner would be an awesome guest, and I will try my best.
That is a wonderful, wonderful answer.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, man. We appreciate you coming on. Really cool to hear about everything that's gone on. Really excited to follow your progress next year, and best of luck.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.